Reporting on the games you love by people who love to game. The MMO Reporter Network.
You're listening to the Happy Hearthstone. This show is brought to you by Doghouse Systems. Choose your weapon with Doghouse Systems. By Audible. Get your free audiobook and your free trial today. By GoDaddy. Put your website to work while you play. If you'd like to directly support this show and the nice people who make it, you can find more information at gamediplomat.com/donate. Hello and welcome to episode 43 of the Happy Hearthstone Podcast, the longest running Hearthstone podcast in the history of space and time and cards. I'm your host, Josh Augustine, and this week I'm joined once again by the awesome, the good-looking, I assume, Scott Lance.
Hello, everybody.
Hello. You can just tell by his voice that he's a good-looking fellow.
Yeah, it's all in the voice. My voice is good-looking. How's that?
I'll agree with that. So Scott has been on the show many times before. He's always the one that kind of comes on when we do, I don't know, should I say the hard-hitting kind of episodes? Like the really in-depth strategy, the reviews, that sort of stuff?
Yeah, it's like the 120 minutes, because we always go long.
That's true. Not this episode. This episode will be different, Scott. I can feel it in my bones.
Let's do it.
All right, so let's talk about why we're happy. I'm happy because this week I opened up Crush, which I got in Arena for the first time this week and then got from my pack in the Arena afterwards. It just felt right. That's the Warrior card. 7 mana, destroy a minion. But if you have a damaged minion, it costs 4 less, 3 mana to kill a minion. I love it. I'm really happy.
Yeah, nice. That's an epic, right?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. So, which made me feel good because I have gotten epics and legendaries before in this set, but I've gotten the mini mage and Hemet Nessing Wary and Clockwork Giant, none of which I've been particularly excited to run. So this was the first one that I was really like, okay, cool, I'm happy I got this this card.
Yeah.
All right, so why are you happy?
I'm happy because last week I finally got my gold paladin, 500 wins.
What? Nice, yeah. Congratulations, dude, that's awesome.
Yeah, thanks. And I'll tell you, it's a slog. I mean, I didn't notice how close I was, and I finally just happened to look at my win count, and I was like at, I don't know, 480 or something like that. I was like, oh, holy crap, this is within reach. But it came from, like, I don't know, 2.5 legendary runs, and Paladin just kind of being my primary class for months and months and months, probably 6-8 months, and a lot of ranked play. So I've started, I'm taking a new strategy now where I'm just kind of playing ranked every season with a variety of decks. And if one happens to do well, I'll kind of stick with it. And if I think one ends up being capable of making a run for legendary, I may do that. But just start getting those ranked wins across all classes. Might as well.
Nice. Get all those gold gold champions.
Yeah, I figure by my calculations, here in about 8 years, I'll have it.
Perfect. Well, we'll have you back on then and have a big ceremony. How about that?
Sweet.
All right, let's talk about a little bit of news before we jump into the meat of the show. There was kind of, I don't know if you want to call it a leak, but an unofficial kind of announcement that they're releasing some new Hearthstone stuff at PAX East, which, if I'm not mistaken, was where the game was originally announced, 2 years ago. So I think we could be in for some pretty big news. What do you think?
Yeah, that'd be awesome. And I know, I can't remember 2 years ago, but I know last year they announced Nax at PAX East.
Yeah, so I bet, so I'm pretty sure, because this show is basically like 2 years old now. And I started right after the announcement. So I think it was PAX East.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So just so everyone knows, PAX East released their own description of the panel ahead of time, which says it's going to have new info for Overwatch, Heroes of the Storm, and what we care about, Hearthstone. So I don't know. I think we could see maybe the next expansion. It feels about time for that. Could be exciting.
Yeah, and let's see. So last year they announced Nax at PAX East, but PAX East was like a month later last year.
Yeah, that's true.
And then
true.
It came out in, I think, late June, early July, because it spanned like 5 weeks, the Nax release, or spanned 4 weeks anyway.
Yeah.
And this time, though, I think they've been trying to be on the ball with releasing stuff more. You know, when they came out with GVG, they were like, pow, 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 pow. Oh, it's out in Arena. Oh, it's out for real. It'll be out in 2 weeks or whatever. Yeah. They said it'll be out in December, but it turned out to be early December. We got the Arena thing before we expected.
Yeah, which
we got
is very unlike Blizzard. At right. The beginning of the time window you gave us? Well, yes, thank you. Awesome.
Yeah, and last year they said that when they laid down the foundations for Nax, they said subsequent adventure packs were going to be a lot easier to make. And so that leads us to believe that the turnaround time can be faster. They can release them sooner. It's been, about 8-9 months, I think, since Next came out. I mean, I think we're totally due for another, but it would be awesome if it just came out within, I don't know, a few days, a couple weeks of, I'm probably allowing myself to dream here, but, it starts setting our expectations. They can't drop down from that.
So that panel is going to be on March 6th, which is a Friday at 10:30 a.m. I think PAX East streams a lot of their stuff, and if not, a lot of kind of independent news sites will stream the panels. And so I'm sure this will be streamed somewhere like BlizzPro or somewhere like that. The focus is on Blizzard news, so definitely keep an eye out for that. Let's get into this episode, Scott, which is our famous Goblins versus Gnomes review. It's not famous because it hasn't happened yet, but it could be famous someday, so I'm just setting the standard there. So before we get into it, let's talk about what kind of review is this, because I know some people were disappointed. It's not a complete review. Last time, we took 3 hours to review the 30 cards in Naxxramas, and there are 123 cards in this expansion. I tried to sell Scott on a 24-hour straight review, but he just wasn't buying it.
Could have done a charity stream or something.
There you go. And by the end, we're just like, we don't even care anymore. It's an A+. A+, yeah. Just move on. Yeah. So instead, how we're doing this is we picked a sampling of cards to talk about, the ones we think you should really care about. So on this episode, we're covering neutral cards, right? And at each quality level, we're going to pick 3 cards each. One card that we think you simply must craft, one card that you simply must draft in Arena, and one card that you should always avoid, or dust, pretty much. And then, so each of us will pick one card for each of those and then kind of talk about it. If people want more in the future, and this is what I'm curious, if this is enough for people because it's neutral, covers all the decks, let us know. But if you want more, we're thinking in a future episode maybe focus on class cards where you pick two. You know, one that you craft and draft and one to always avoid. But just let us know if that's what you want or if you want us to move on to more deck battles, anything. Just let us know.
Yeah, I think we like doing these shows.
Yeah, they're fun. Man, so fun. All right, let's jump into it, Scott, because we got a long ways to go. Let's do commons first. I'll get us started. Let's start with the best to craft. I'm going to throw out there Piloted Shredder. This guy is awesome. This is the 4-cost, 4/3 minion. With Death Rattle, summon a random 2-cost minion. I love it. He always passes the vanilla test if he gets his little Death Rattle effect off. And, I mean, it's just lots of fun surprises.
Yeah, I love this guy. He has the whole random element that makes a lot of the GVG cards just so interesting and makes the gameplay more dynamic and varied. He's a good value, so he's fun to use. And he's I've seen a lot of decks running him, but in a mech deck, he adds a special value just because he's got the mech keyword.
Yeah. That is very true. Yeah, man, I just love that 4-attack. It's like the 3-body doesn't bother me so much. Because, I mean, if they're going to kill it and not get me a Death Rattle, they're blowing a card and a silence effect. That's a great trade.
Yeah, normally I don't like cards that have higher power than toughness. But for some reason, I've noticed 3-2s and 4-3s, I don't mind so much. And I guess even 2-1s, I don't mind so much, although they're pretty vulnerable to Rogue and Mage, hero power abilities, Druid for that matter.
Yeah, I don't know if it's just me being impatient, but I don't mind it too because I want that Death Rattle effect. It's fun.
Yeah.
You want to trade your Taz Dingo for it? That's fine. Let's do it.
And the 4-3 kind of forces them to make that trade sooner rather than later, so you're going to find out, what fun guy pops out that sooner. Yeah.
All right, what's your best common card to draft?
So I took a different stance here, and I said Antique Healbot. And it's not that he's the most powerful card, but I felt like it's a solid card that goes in a lot of decks. Games that are going for the long game and, want to be able to recover from an aggro early start.
Can you read the stats out just so people
remember? Oh, yeah, sorry. Yeah. It's a 5-mana cost 3/3, and when you summon him, your hero restores 8 life. Which, 8. Focus on 8 life. That is so much life. Yeah. So just when you think, I've had so many games that just when I think, my opponent's in tough shape, he manages to stabilize and bring that out. I'm not normally huge on heal cards. You know, I don't mind a little incidental healing, like on a True Silver Champion or something. This guy's kind of an interesting compromise where he is a 3-3 for 5. So you are definitely overpaying for that body, but 8 life is so much. It probably goes without saying you generally don't want to cast this on turn 5 unless you're already pretty beat up. You often want to wait until you're beat up to cast him. But, man, you bring him down, and a 3-3 body is not insignificant. It's not always enough to take over a game, but it's enough that you don't feel like you skipped your turn to do some healing.
Yeah, totally. Like you said, I love saving it because a lot of people will overextend when they think they have you on the ropes to try and get you down to that last bit. And then right when you're at 5 and they've played all their cards and they think they got you, you toss this down and buy another turn and stabilize.
Yep.
I love it. Very cool. All right, let's talk about best to draft. I had to do this guy, the Annoyatron, right? He is the 2-cost, let me pull up the pierced, he is 2-cost, yeah, 2-cost, taunt, divine shield, 1-2, as annoying as he sounds. He's just always useful in arena, right? It'll hold off a rush early, he'll trade with 2 health minions easily, and even late game, he's going to absorb 2 big hits from their big guys if the board is kind of empty and they just have their big guys on the board. There's just never a time that I'm sad to have this in my hand in arena.
Yeah, I feel the same way in arena, and I think he's awesome and constructed as well in certain decks, be it mech decks or be it my survival paladin that runs redemption, because nothing is like the only way to make an Annoyatron more annoying is to put a redemption behind him and come back
oh,
again.
Man.
Yeah, it's great. But yeah, in arena, arena often ends up being the slugfest between creatures. And so little things like Divine Shield or making your guys a little bigger, or just if you can put up a taunt wall to rob your opponent the ability for them to, you know, choose cost-efficient trades for themselves, buys you that turn to either punch face a little more or to set up your own cost-efficient trades on your terms. And, you know, it's not a high-impact card from its own stats, but sort of tactically what it does on the board, it can be fairly high-impact.
Yeah, it lets you do a lot more with your other cards.
Yeah, and if you're in a race situation, which arena often devolves into, then it helps you win that race. It can also turn situations into a race where, because it prevents your opponent from directly trading minion for minion. In a way that they may prefer to do. So you sort of set that down on your turn. You sort of declare through your actions by putting him down and then starting to punch your opponent's face. You're saying it's like when you're in grade school, right? And the other kid's like, first one to the end is a rotten egg. And then he starts running before you have a chance to,
yeah.
to even know what's going on. It kind of has that feel to it because you can start that race right away and then you can prevent them from sort of competing in it for a whole turn.
Yeah. And it's just as annoying as the kid that used to do that in grade school.
Yeah.
So that sounds about right.
It's so well named. I love this card.
All right. What's yours?
Okay, so I said Micro Machine, and I think this guy has been a big overperformer, and he's somebody I like in Constructed and in Draft, but his stats, he's a 1-2 on paper, which doesn't – 1-2 for 2, which doesn't seem great, but every turn he gains +1 attack, and to be clear, that doesn't mean like – you know, on your turn every turn, that means one on your turn, one on your opponent's turn, one on your turn again. So every time it goes all the way around the table, he's gained +2 attack. And most games, he's a lightning rod that gets taken out really, really early. But I've had some games where he just grows and grows and grows, and he can't get taken out. And then sometimes if, you know, you're playing a mech deck and you get some spare parts, the one that switches the attack and defense, it's kind of fun then to give him a huge amount of defense and then start his attack growing all over again from 2.
Oh, yeah. I definitely had someone do that to me. That is obnoxious.
It is, because I've had these guys end up as, you know, 6-7, 7-7s occasionally. It's rare, but it can happen. And that's kind of why I like him. He starts off on your turn as a 1-2, but that never actually matters. By your opponent's turn, he's a 2-2 for 2. And admittedly, that's a little under-costed. But if it's on a board state where he can live through that first turn, like if you coin him out on turn 1, or if you put him behind a taunt minion, or if he's just not the biggest threat at the time and your opponent has to be taken out of their stuff, all it takes is for him to live to your turn. He's a 3-2. Unless you choose to sacrifice him, he's going to survive that and be a 4-2 on your opponent's turn. And man, it just gets nasty. So I feel like he doesn't have a lot of downside, and his upside can be significant.
Yeah, I love these cards that just have that tremendous potential, right? For such a small investment, you're paying 2 mana. And if he survives, he can win you the game. I really like it in Arena as well, because opponents will have less reliable removal, right? If you're playing Priest or whatever and Constructed, okay, they're probably going to poke that for 2 and then it'll drop. But in Arena, who knows? Maybe the cards didn't pop up for them. Maybe they don't have a cheap removal like that.
Yeah, that's right.
All right, Best to Dust. So this is the common card that we think you should get rid of. Avoid in Arena. If you draft or if you open in a pack, that's fine. Dust it, build something else. I'm going to get this started because actually I got it and I dusted it. So I'm living up to our story here. It's the Lost Tall Strider. It is a 4-cost beast, 5/4. It's just a dumb card for a dumb bird. This will rarely kill more than one creature. 5/4 is just not ideal. I will always take Chillwind Yeti a 4/5 instead. And also, this bird is dumb. It's wearing goggles, has a bandolier with bullets on it. Like, what is this guy doing? How did he get lost? If he's smart enough to make goggles, how did he get lost?
this guy doesn't impress me. You're right. The Chillwind Yeti's better stats. I mean, I guess if you want, you know, the same amount of punch, you don't mind the suboptimal configuration, and you're playing a hunter deck, it's possible that he wouldn't be horrible, and that's about the best thing I could say.
Yeah. And if that's the best thing you can say, you could probably just dust it, because there are plenty of cards out there that will definitely never be horrible that you can use instead.
Yeah, that's very true.
All right, what are you dusting?
Well, yeah, a card which I think gives the Lost Tall Strider a run for his money is the Flying Machine. This is the 3-mana cost mech. It's a 1/4 with Wind Fury. So yeah. I like Wind Fury. I don't like Wind Fury on a 1-power creature. Yeah. I don't like 1/4s for 3 with or without Wind Fury. I actually don't generally care for creatures that have Wind Fury baked in. I love the Shaman card that will like give Wind Fury on demand to things. Not the Wind Fury card, but the 3/3 that kind of gives it as a side effect, because it's unexpected and you can add it to things that are already big on the turn where they can attack and use it for the first time. But Wind Fury baked on a card is often, you know, they just ask too much in the casting cost. And this guy is just a living example of that. What are they thinking?
Yeah. Like, this is one of the cards where, like, remember how we talked about the Micro Machine as a lightning rod, right? And that can be very valuable. But this guy, if they have anything on the board, they'll just kill it because they only take 1 damage in response. It's not really a lightning rod in the same way. The threat isn't there. I have seen, I should say, once in all of my games since this card came out, I've seen one person combo it with Blessing of Kings, and it was awesome, right? Because then suddenly it's a 5/9 with Wind Fury, which was awesome. Yeah. But every other play has just been like, man, I wish you played a different card there, don't you? You just have to avoid dreaming best case scenarios with this card, I think.
Yeah, it's really bad. At higher level play, I don't think I've ever really seen this used.
Yeah. All right, so that's the commons. Let's jump up to the rares. We're getting into more exciting cards. It's still neutrals only. Best to craft. I'll go first. The Arcane Nullifier X21. Not only does it have an awesome name, but I just really like crafting this card because it feels like it finalizes that line of good defenders that are available to you, where you have Senjin Shieldmaster, right? 3/5, plain vanilla, Sludge Belcher, costs more, but it's a 3/5 that also gets another taunt. And then you have this guy, who's a 2/5 taunt for 4, that can't be targeted by spells or hero powers. So I just like that idea of, okay, if I'm building decks and I need to counter, you know, a spell-heavy deck, maybe I bring this guy instead of the Shieldmaster or something like that. I just like having those options.
Yeah, that sounds about right to me. Of all the Tezdingo and Sludge Belcher, I think I actually prefer this guy the least of the three, but I am running him in a mech deck, and there are some situations where he can be very strong. There's a few mech cards, I think they're the class-specific cards for some classes, that under some conditions can give like +2/+2 or something like that to a given mech. And yeah, I'll tell you, you pull
Iron
that on
Sensei,
this guy.
The rogue card.
Yeah. And I think one of the, was the Shaman Mace, I think? Does something real similar as its death.
Oh yeah, it gives
effect.
A random friendly mech +2/+2 when it death rattles.
And those, you know, it's suddenly a 2/5 that can't be blocked. It's like, well, the things that, that crash themselves into it are probably going to live, and it's probably going to take like one or two hits from a reasonably beefy creature, and it's gone. And, you know, how much of a speed bump was that really? But if you can make this thing bigger, that's not so bad. And I haven't tried it yet, but I am wondering, like in a Paladin or Druid deck, if you do have some of those buff cards as well. Okay.
But it can't be targeted by spells, buddy. You can't buff it up.
Oh, not even your own. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
that's right.
So you have to do either creature effects or death rattles that kind of target randomly.
Yeah. The Druid's got that +1/+1 to everything it controls.
Oh,
that
that's true.
Target, yeah, but it's not a whole lot. But still, Druid's, I think, got some opportunities there. But it's, for the most part, it's the mech synergy that you would look for. And I will say, if you can get its toughness up and preferably its attack up, that thing does become a wall. But that's kind of a combo, and I've found it, and I've used it in practice. It doesn't happen all that often.
Yeah. All right, what's your best craft?
Okay, so the angle I took here is not necessarily that this is the best card or the most applicable card, but that it lights up a fun deck, and I think in that type of deck, it can be quite strong, and I also think this is a card that hasn't gotten the kind of attention it deserves, and so I'm calling it here, I'm calling attention to this thing, and that's Jeeves. So Jeeves is a 4-mana cost 1/4, which the stats are horrible, fully acknowledged, and it's a mech.
Yeah, come on, it doesn't even have Wind Fury, buddy.
Yeah. And its ability says, at the end of each player's turn, that player draws until they have 3 cards. So I remember when I first saw this thing, I thought, you know, I got really excited for about 2 or 3 seconds, and I said, wait, that's both players, and it's going to hit both players equally, and I kind of shelved it. And then a long time later, I came back to it. And if you're in very specific circumstances, actually, not even that specific, but if you're in specific circumstances, this thing is a total MVP. And so those circumstances are basically in ultra cheap mech decks. And it turns out that most of the mech decks that people are building these days are ultra cheap. So I've got like a Shaman deck in particular, but I've just been playing around about like taking the same strategy from class to class and then just supplementing it with the best, both mech cards from that class, but even just the best cards of that class. And it turns out that a sort of a Jeeves engine mech deck is really strong. And the premise is you just flush your hand. You make this super cheap deck, and I'm talking by turn 2 or 3, you are puking units on the board. As long as they don't get lucky and play like a Consecration or some sort of AoE, that you are just going to start hitting them early. And the goal is kind of to flush your hand, which if you're playing multiple cards, you're getting a lot more value because there's part of the value of each card is wrapped up in the fact that it is a card. So if you're willing to flush your hand, you're putting more value on the board than your opponent who may be spending the same amount of mana but fewer cards. And then if you can drop a Jeeves, you're drawn, and I'm not kidding here, you draw 1, 2, 3 cards on a turn. You get it immediately on your turn. And this is another thing I didn't realize until I used it, is that it doesn't affect both players equally. Because one, you've built your deck for it. You're gunning for it because you know it's in your hand, so you're trying to flush your hand as quick as possible. Your opponent has no idea. They're not doing that same thing probably. And then you play it, it's on your turn that you get all these, you get to draw these cards. And then the thing is, on their turn, if they choose to kill it, they don't get the benefit. So a lot of times, they either treat it as a lightning rod, in which case you've drawn hopefully 2 or 3 cards, and it's kind of balanced out from a like arcane intellect point of view. Maybe you even draw 3 cards from it. Or they let it live, and hopefully your deck is so cheap that you're flushing all like 3 or 4 cards you're drawing on every turn from Jeeves in your normal turn draw. And since those mech cards have so much synergy, and they're just cheap, and again, you're flushing the cards, you're getting all the extra value out of all these cards, that Shaman deck I built around this has a really high win rate, and the other classes aren't so bad either.
So isn't it scary to be building your whole deck around hopefully drawing this card that you may never actually get in your hand?
Yeah, and that's true. I would say, you know, I probably get a Jeeves on average most games. I don't get it every game. The deck doesn't need Jeeves to win. I mean, it's kind of just a normal aggro deck. Aggro decks have been doing this since the beginning of time where they flush their hand. But yeah, the difference here is that those other decks generally didn't have cards that let you put a huge number of cards in your hand, possibly turn over turn, at a very cheap price. And this is in the same deck as the Arcane Nullifier that we were just talking about, that big taunt guy that's sometimes hard to get through, as well as Annoyatron and other guys. So that deck is equipped to bring out the defense. In fact, he helps you draw the defense to bring out to stop your opponent from knocking him down.
All right, that's interesting. I'll have to try this, because my experience with him has definitely been more in Arena, where he's sitting my hand because because my opponent has flushed cards better than me, and it's just like, I can't play him. Like, I need to draw one card, but he's going to draw three cards. I can't do it. Not really.
Yeah, I think this would be really bad in Arena. I think this is very much a constructed card, and in a fast... I mean, I purposely pull out all my expensive legendaries. I mean, I just go super, super cheap in these decks. And, you know, if that's the deck concept that you're comfortable running anyway, and if you've got two Jeeves in there to support it, more often than not, you're going to win the Jeeves lottery. And I'm not saying it's the best deck ever, but I'm saying there is really something to it, and it's a lot of fun, and it's not something I'm otherwise seeing in the meta right now.
Yeah, that is true. Fun is not to be underrated, especially since, let's be honest, Scott, there are not really many good rare neutral minions in this set. Like, looking through this list, I was surprised how hard it was to pick one that was like, I guess I'm not ashamed to call that my favorite.
Yeah, I hear you.
Like, Bomb Lobber was really the only other one that I'd consider like, okay, I might craft that.
Yeah, I might have picked Bomb Lobber as the best to craft, but I saw in the notes you had his best to draft, and I'm like, yeah, that's fine. I'll look around elsewhere just for diversity.
Yeah. Speaking of which, let's talk about him right now. Best to draft, he's mine. Bomb Lobber, 5-cost, 3/3, with a battle cry, deal 4 damage to a random enemy minion. This card was made for Arena. I love it. It's an awesome removal effect on a decent body, right? Getting a 3/3 for 5 isn't great, but it's not that bad. And dealing 4 damage to a random enemy is huge. It's hard. I should say it's not hard to play this when there's only one enemy out, right? Like, it seems like, oh, the random effect. Oh, but in Arena, I mean, people aren't filling the board with tons of Murlocs and all this synergy stuff. Like, you can usually get a turn out there where there's just one enemy on the enemy side. You know who you're going to hit.
Mm-hmm. Well, and even if you don't, doing 4 damage just to their side in general often isn't bad. You don't want to throw it out against a lot of 1/1s, but the 1/1s are the easy things to clean up before you drop them often.
Yeah, that is very true. Yeah, and I mean, most of the time, I'm happy if this guy kills anything. Even if it's just killing the 3/2, it's still, he comes in, he kills something, and still has a body they have to deal with.
Yeah, Bomb Lobber is, my notes just say, yep, this guy is the real deal. And that's kind of my position on him, is he is no joke. Every time my opponent plays him, whether it's Arena, whether it's Constructed, I'm like, oh man, that guy's just good.
Yeah, he is solid.
Yeah.
All right, what's yours?
I said Little Exorcist. Now, in part because there weren't that many, as you noted, there weren't that many choices to choose from. But he's still not that bad in Arena, especially because Death Rattle tends to be sprinkled around. So if you're willing to hold on to, I think it's a her, for a few turns, then you're much more likely to play it against something with Death Rattle. And I wouldn't expect to get more than +1/+1. But if you're using kind of the vanilla scale, getting a 3/4, so it's a 3 mana cost 2/3, which is not that great, but it comes with taunt, which still isn't great, but it's battle cries, it gets +1/+1 for each enemy death rattle minion. So that, if you can fire it off at least one enemy death rattle minion, then suddenly it's a 3/4 for 3 with taunt, which is about half a mana above what you would otherwise expect. And I think in Arena, it's not too hard to find a situation where you can make that happen.
Yeah, I don't know. After the Undertaker nerf, I just haven't seen people taking Death Rattle as much. To me, I see it as a 2/3 more than I see it as even a 3/4. I see it just drop down as a 2/3, and it's susceptible to silence too, as opposed to the big grizzly bear.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not a big fan.
I'm not a huge fan either, but these were some slim pickings.
That is very true. I'll give you that. All right, let's talk about some of the best to dust, because we got options here.
I was going to say that was actually the easiest category.
Yeah, it really was. I'll go first. The Gnomish Experimenter. Let me find him real fast, because I totally forget how much he costs. Was it 3? Yeah, it's 3. Okay. It's a 3-cost, 3/2. Battle cry, draw a card. If it's a minion, transform it into a chicken. I mean, the stats are just woefully underpowered, right? You get 3/2s for 2 cost. So you're paying 1 mana to draw a card, and if it's a minion, which it probably is, transform it into a chicken. So you're paying 1 mana to get a 1/1. 1/1 is just barely a card, right? I would rather have, I think, a raptor for 2 mana. Just get this out earlier. You can craft commons much better than this rare with the dust that you get.
Yeah, I don't really disagree with that. I guess the way that I look at that 1/1 is, if you get the 1-1, it's almost like it's its own kind of spare part, right? It's a little overcosted one cost spell that you got as a side effect of playing something else.
Oh, but a 1-1 is so much worse than like Time Rewinder.
Arguably, yes. I've had a lot of games of Time Rewinder in my hand, not really doing a whole lot for me. A 1-1 is at least a body, and I'm not saying this is strong. I'm just saying there are worse things. But we are ignoring the payoff, and this is a case I feel weird because normally I think I would call attention away from the payoff. But you know, there is a 40% chance. It depends on what your spell ratio is in that deck. Maybe a 1/3 chance, give or take. But there is a chance you're going to draw a spell, and the spell is a full, you know, value card, no joke. You know, it was worth, what do I keep seeing? Like 2.5 mana is what it costs to draw a card. So you're not getting a full 2.5 mana's worth of value here because there's a chance you'll get your spell and there's a chance you won't. But in some decks, that chance isn't horrible.
That's true. I tend to prefer minion heavy decks over spell heavy decks. So this could also just be a personal preference where I wouldn't put this in most of my decks.
I think it's especially bad in Arena, but in Constructed, you'll know the decks that are more open to using it.
I will say, we've talked about this on the show a few times before, and you mentioned it in the notes here. Some people get really scared because, oh, I might transform my legendary into a chicken. I mean, don't worry about that sort of thing. Because, I mean, unless you're going to draw, like you said, Sky, unless you're going to draw every single card in your deck, don't even think about that sort of thing.
Right. People get way too attached, like, oh, I was going to draw that. It's like, but you didn't know that, and you might not have, and it was all random. So the cards you draw, I actually thought you put this card in perfect perspective when you said that you might draw 1-1 for one off of it, and that's exactly the way you should be looking at it. Because that, you know, that legendary that it quote-unquote turned it into could have just been at the bottom of your deck. And in fact, I would argue you're better off than just not seeing any card at all, even if it turns it into a chicken, because at least you know what you aren't going to be drawing. And if you know what's in your deck, you have more information about what's coming, good or bad.
Yeah, that's very true.
Because it could have just easily taken your worst creature and turned it into a chicken. Not that that's a good situation either, but, you know.
All right, what are you dusting?
I am dusting the target dummy, which is a dummy of a card indeed. So... You know, after the Wisp, I, for some reason in my head, had it that, like, okay, there's the 1-0 cost card. That's it. That's the only one we'll ever have. Boy, did they prove me wrong. They managed to find another crappy 0 cost card that you should never, ever play. I shouldn't say never, ever, but the vast majority of the time. This is a 0 cost, 0/2 mech with taunt. So, but the best thing I can say about it is that it's a mech, and I don't know, maybe it's there, but it sure isn't going to be synergy with the mech warper that makes things cheaper, which is one of the big mech synergy cards.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, right next to it in the card list is Clockwork Gnome, which is a 2/1 that gives you a spare part. Like, I'd rather just synergize with that mech rather than this guy.
Yeah. Clockwork Gnome is such a better card than this. Everything is a better card than this. This thing's horrible. If you're using it, I think that you should stop and ask yourself why. I don't even think Mirror Image is a great card, but the fact that it does drop two of these things for, you know, what, one mana, at least gives you a little more impact out of your card, and you can drop it at strategic times and know that you have kind of a meaningful speed bump between your minions and whatever your opponent wants to do to them. But this thing is just so inconsequential. Unless you're just trying to, like, flush your hand, maybe it would go well with the Jeeves strategy or something.
just because you can play it doesn't mean you should, though.
It's not good, no.
When your best situation is, I guess it doesn't hurt me to play this card, you know you should be busting it.
Touche.
All right, let's jump up to Epic. This is where things get even more exciting. The best Epic card to craft in this set, I think, is the Enhanso Mecano. This is a 4-cost, 3/2. It has Battle Cry, give your other minions Wind Fury, Taunt, or Divine Shield at random. That card would have been incredible before the at random just jumps in on the end into italics. This card is fun, right? I think it's actually a quite solid card for crafting, so when constructed, when you can build decks that can take advantage of it, especially mech decks. If you can hit this onto two minions, that's when I think you hit value, right? You give Wind Fury, Taunt, or Divine Shield to two other minions for getting you're paying two mana for that effect, essentially. Sometimes you're going to get even more. I think it's fun.
It's definitely a fun card. I don't think I'm quite as bullish on its value as you are. I generally think you have to get about maybe two, but more like three creatures to really pay off. The fact that it's random means that, you know, your fragile guy might end up getting taunt, which doesn't really help you, and your one attack power guy might end up getting Wind Fury. And I mean, sometimes it's going to pay off. And I had this in a shaman deck that had guys all over the spectrum, and it was, you know, especially with the totems out, it's kind of fun to just give all sorts of random stuff to them. But, you know, like a Wind Fury spell power totem doesn't really help a whole lot.
That is true.
Although giving it taunt is not so bad, admittedly.
Yeah, but Scott, it says in the comments here, or in the flavor text, his enhancements are gluten-free.
Well, that's something. I guess he won't set off those wheat allergens.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the other thing I found in using him, because I did use him for quite a while, is he was a bit more of a win more card. Where he shines is when you've got a board full of guys. But you know when you have a board full of guys? When you're winning. And in those situations, you don't necessarily need this guy to continue winning. I would argue that the games that need the help are the games where you're behind or maybe at parity. And I can see at parity if both sides have somehow managed to build up a board state that just hasn't been killing each other. And that doesn't usually happen. But if you can do that, it's good at parity. But most parity games, it's kind of lackluster because parity games often lead to more empty boards. And when you're losing, you just don't want him. He doesn't help.
All right, that's fair. Yeah. All right, so what's yours, Scott?
Yeah, I mean, that Enhancer Meccano, he's no Hobgoblin. So.
No Hobgoblin. Are you kidding me, Scott? That's your choice?
Well, again, kind of slim pickings, but the angle I took here was, one, the really good choice was down in your best to draft, and I wanted to leave it down there. So when we get to it, I'll let you know that's probably what I would have said is best to craft. But the angle I was taking with this one and even with the previous best to craft rare was more you can put this in a deck, and that deck will be interesting and fun. You can build a deck around it. So if you care about fun, and I think most of your listeners do, the Hobgoblin can be fun. So it's a 3-cost 2/3. Okay, so it's not quite on the vanilla scale. It's you know, losing about a mana's worth of stats. And its ability is whenever you play a 1-attack minion, give it +2/+2. So there is some really interesting stuff that you can do with this. Because if you drop, you know, just as a random example, drop an Armorsmith. Well, suddenly it goes from being a 1/4 to being a 3/6. Okay, now that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And there's an awful lot of 1-attack minions in the game. I have not seen any like successful Hobgoblin decks on the ladder, but I really do think there's probably something there, and I am looking forward to building a deck around this guy and taking him out for a spin. And I've heard from other folks that have played with Hobgoblin decks, and you know, it's basically, I think they've said it's not necessarily like legendary capable, but it's fun and it can hold its own under certain circumstances, and it's just so much fun to play. You get to do things you wouldn't normally do.
Yeah, like maybe even play, I don't know, like Flying Machine.
Actually, I'll tell you, that's not a bad synergy right there. Or, you know, that Wisp that you've been looking for a reason to play. Suddenly it gets a 3/3 for...
Yeah. That's poor target dummy, though. Still gets nothing.
That's right. Poor target dummy.
All right, let's talk about best epic cards to draft. Because this is the card I think we would have picked for both categories if we could. Piloted Sky Golem. I mean, all right, so this is a 6-cost for a 6/4 with Death Rattle, summon a random 4-cost minion. So it's similar to the Shredder from earlier. But it's just a nice body that can trade. I mean, 6 damage is a big chunk of damage. And then it replaces itself with a 4-cost minion, which is only 2 less than you paid initially. Like, that's this is exactly what you want in Arena, I think.
Yeah, and there's some pretty cool 4-cost minions, especially if you're lucky enough to get a class-specific minion that often do some really interesting and powerful things.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Man, I don't think I've gotten like a different class's minion yet.
Fantastic. I've seen some pop out. Somebody, and this was the smaller golem, but somebody got a Lightwell that popped out of one of the smaller golems the other day. And I was just staring at it, and I forget what class he was. He was like a warrior or something. And I'm like, that's really annoying. Like, I don't... Yeah. You know, we were like trading firepower as we went. It's like, I don't have anything that can deal 5 to that. And I had already hit his hero for a little bit of damage. He healed up. Anyway, point is, really fun stuff can pop out of these things. Yeah. Stuff that you would never expect. They can be of other classes. And yeah, these are solid cards. These
just to remind people the value of a 4 mana cost card. I mean, Mechanical Yeti, 4/5. The Piloted Shredder, which is actually a hilarious thing to get. So it drops and then drops another one. Like, you, I mean, a 4 mana cost minion is really good. I mean, you don't get the Battle Cry effect, so Antique Healbot would actually be quite disappointing. But, I mean, any of this other stuff. Maybe Arcane Nullifier. Yeah, buddy.
Yeah.
I'm going to sell you on that card by the end of the show. Yeah. So I love this guy in Arena in particular because it feels to me like Harvest Golem 2.0. Do you remember early Arena where, like, Harvest Golem, yep, take him. Take him because you can trade him twice. Like, that's what this feels like.
Yeah, this guy's everywhere in Constructed and in Arena. I think you're exactly right. I don't think many people pass him up in Arena because I see a lot of this guy.
Yeah. All right, what's your favorite card to draft?
So I picked Recombobulator. You don't see this guy used a whole lot, but he's a 2 mana cost 3/2, which is already not so bad, with a battle cry of transform a friendly minion into a random minion with the same cost. And admittedly, it's kind of like those Pandaren guys that bounce other units into your hand when you play them, in that it's not a guaranteed upside. It can be downside, and a lot of times you wish you could just play a 3/2 without futzing with what's on the board. Mm-hmm. But I would say that in some circumstances, you can get good use out of him. So in Arena, I would maybe stay in Arena, the card quality of the things you picked is often like suboptimal. Like, you know, you've been in that situation where you're given a choice between 3 bad cards.
Oh, yeah.
Well, here's a chance to turn that bad card into something else of the same thing. And if you can manage to transform an expensive card, if you have one on the table when you play it, you can often attack something with the expensive card, kill something else and leave your expensive card in a wounded state, and then transform it into something that's fully healed. Might be good, might not, but still, it's not bad.
Yeah, to me, yeah, it can be surprisingly useful. We talked about this on the last show a bit, this card, and often, like you said, it's just a raptor, and I'm totally fine by that. I'm totally fine dropping this guy on turn 2, which is nice because there's a lot of 2-cost minions where you feel like you have to keep them, like, it gives Divine Shield, so you don't want to drop it. I like the freedom to just, like, yep, turn 2, he's in my hand, let's throw him down.
Mm-hmm. And he's got the fun factor. You know, all this random stuff going on in GVG, it can be a lot of fun.
Yeah, very true. All right, let's talk about some of the best epics to dust. I'll go first, as usual. Mini Mage, I really wanted to like this card, I'm not going to lie. It's kind of cool, right? It's a 4-cost, 4/1 with stealth and spell damage. It just feels sneaky, but it's just so weird. There's so much better options for stealth damage minions and much better options for cheap spell damage minions. Like, I don't really get what this is trying to do.
Well, I will say I don't know if there are better options for cheap spell power, because there's honestly not that many spell power minions in the game, and most of them are pretty bad. There's
Cobalt Geomancer, half the cost, same spell damage.
Yeah.
I mean, I would argue that a 2/2 is more sturdy than a 4/1, even if it has stealth.
Yeah, I think, I mean, most of the time, and by most, I mean, I'm waving my hands here, 2/3 of the time, this guy will be able to live just fine. But, you know, your opponent breaks out that Consecrate, or he breaks out that, you know, anything, Knife Juggler or Mad Bomber or whatever. I mean, there are a lot of things that can get to him, but most of the time he's going to be safe sitting there. You can get maybe some spell power damage out of him with a couple of spell casts. And if you detect a threat from your opponent, like if they bring out a Knife Juggler, then you are able to kind of get that alpha strike of 4 damage. I mean, I see him as being kind of a good finisher. You typically want to play him the turn before last, when people's hands are empty and they don't necessarily have a lot of threats they've been holding in their hand to play. And then you can flush whatever, you know, direct damage spells you've been holding in your hand, and then go ahead and get one attack from him. He's almost like a poor man Leroy or something in that case.
I think it's of poor Leroy. Yeah,
it's true. I do think this guy's bad.
I'm
just saying,
100 dust for him. I will happily take 100 dust.
Yeah, and you're right, for an epic. I mean, if this guy were a common, I still wouldn't think he was good for the rarity. And I, you know, unless I'm doing some weird spell power deck, I'd just rather have a Jungle Panther, because like what you're saying, that second point of toughness, especially in stealth, makes a huge amount of difference.
Yeah. 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 Toss this guy back, get a craft, whatever rare you want, and then move on. I say,
yeah, craft a Jungle Panther.
There you go. Yeah. Good luck with that. Keep trying.
Yeah.
All right. What's yours?
Yeah. So I said Junkbot, the aptly named Junkbot. So he's a 5 mana cost 1/5, which what? What?
Yeah.
And his ability is whenever a friendly mech dies, gain +2/+2. So admittedly, in a mech deck, I guess this guy can get out of control. But one of the things that I always ask myself with these type of cards is how many activations of the ability, you know, when it's like under certain situations he gets to grow, how many of those do I need to break even? And often these kinds of cards, you get one activation and it's profitable. Some of them you need two activations and it's profitable. Here you need a solid 2 activations. And it's something you don't really want to be banking on, your friendly mech's dying. Well, I mean, that's not optimal. I want to play assuming that my guys are going to live. And in fact, I want to play with guys helping my guys live.
Yeah.
I guess this guy could possibly act as a deterrent from your opponent. Like, they want to kill this guy before they kill your other mechs. That's about the best thing I can think of. I just don't know.
Yeah, it's super weird.
And 5 mana. There's so many big, huge things. You can play a Sludge Belcher for 5 mana. You're going to play a 1/5? Are you serious?
Yeah, it's just, yeah, I'm totally with you on this. And, I mean, the fact that unless you're ready to trade your minions on the turn that you drop it, there's no way that your opponent is going to choose to kill all your other mechs before it kills this guy. I mean, it's only 1 damage. You'll just kill it first.
Yeah. So, maybe if you put him behind, you know, one of the mech taunt minions, and I'm stretching here, you know, maybe if you are positioned to just trade a bunch of your other mech guys, the turn he comes out, but these are all a bunch of silence. Ifs. Nah, there's so many strong mechs that you can just play, and they're just good, and they just like reward you for having those mechs on the board, and they don't make you throw them away to get that benefit. Screw all that.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you. 5 cost is just insane. Pure dumb. Dust it.
Yep. Dust
it. Let's get to the final section because it's the most exciting, the legendary section. I am super excited about this. How many legendaries have you got before we get started? I'm curious. Sorry, from this set.
Quite a few, actually. And I even crafted a gold Dr. Boom, I have to admit.
What? Gold? Oh, my word.
I've now crafted 2 golds. I've crafted Karen, and I've crafted Dr. Boom. And it goes with my I have this thing where I only craft golds that make other cards, so I'm getting at least like 2 pieces of gold art for my money. But, you know, honestly, cards I'm going to put in a lot of my decks and I get a lot of mileage out of.
A gold Dr. Boom is 3,200 dust.
Yeah, as was my gold Karen. So, yes, it's 6,400 dust on 2 cards.
All right, so the thing that was interesting to me, because we talked about how it was kind of slim pickings on rare and epic, there are actually a lot of legendary cards in this set. There are 11.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so let's jump into a best to craft. This is no surprise, right? We've talked about all of these cards, so why not this one too? Sneed's Old Shredder. It's an 8 cost, 5/7. With the death rattle, summon a random legendary minion. It's not a perfect card, right? I'm not going to argue this card is awesome and should be played in every deck because it's so effective. But I think it should be the legendary card that you craft because it's the way to get all the other legendary cards that I can't afford, right? You buy one legendary, get them all for free. That's a great deal.
Yep. And, you know, there's some things you want and there's some things you don't want out of Sneed Shredder. What you don't want is a Nat Peggle or a Lore Master Cho. Generally, you don't want those. The ones you do want is Sneed's Old Shredder. That is fun.
just keeps chaining into itself.
Yeah, it's like Sneeds within Sneeds. It's like Sneedception. but the even better choice than Sneed to get out of Sneed is to get a Kel'Thuzad. Because you get the Kel'Thuzad, and guess what? Sneed died that turn. So Sneed comes back.
Oh my gosh.
I had a Kel'Thuzad pop out of a Sneed one game, and my opponent just conceded on the spot. It was beautiful.
Yeah, that feels dirty. That is just not right.
But you can't hit a home run if you don't swing for the ball, and that means you got to play Sneed to have those moments.
Yeah, exactly. This is just one of those cards that they're not every card in the game is going to give you moments to talk about with your friends and stuff like this, but this is just one of those cards that just makes epic stories. I love it.
Yeah, and there really is. Like, obviously, most of the legendaries are pretty good. often it happens kind of near the end of the turn. Like often it's your opponent that kills him, not you. And if your opponent has killed him, he's already expended some of his firepower taking out the Sneeds, which means whatever pops out of him often can't be dealt with. The legendaries do tend to be focused on the higher end of the mana spectrum by far. I mean, there are a couple of cheap ones. There's like, you know, one mana cost and a couple 2 mana cost ones, but the vast majority of them are on the higher end of the spectrum. You don't get battle cry effects from them, but most of the legendaries actually don't have battle cry effects. It's pretty rare. They tend to have more death rattle or continuous in play effects, and so that's good. It means that unlike the other shredders and golems, where you're losing a lot of value when you get those battle cry minions coming out, you don't have to worry about that so much here.
Yeah. Yep. All right, so what are you crafting?
So I said Trogs or the Earthinator, and I know that Brugge in the last episode talked about that being a card that he really likes, and I'm with him, man. This is a 7-cost 6/6, and whenever your opponent casts a spell, summon a Burly Rockjaw Trog. And the Burly Rockjaw Trogs are burly, well-named. Yeah. Those are the 3/5s that get – I can't even remember what the stat boost is.
Plus 2 attack
every time your opponent casts a spell. So not only – like – you know, the first spell, you get a 3/5. The second spell, you get another 3/5. And then the first 3/5 turns into a 5/5. And I believe it's permanent.
It is, yeah.
It's just out of control. So back when you and I did the Naxxramas review, and people were just going out of their skulls, and some people still do, over, oh my God, why am I forgetting its name? The 5/5 that makes all the spells much more expensive.
Oh.
I'm forgetting its name.
Oh. I can picture his face. What is his name? He's holding a little mushroom.
Yeah.
I'll get to the bottom of this.
Sorry about that. Anyway, that guy. And a lot of people still to this day put him in nearly every deck that they make. But I'm like, that's just one turn, and it just makes it more expensive. And
Lofeb.
I don't – Lofeb, yeah. And I don't see that as being like a good, meaningful deterrent. It's maybe a one-turn speed bump. Maybe.
Yeah.
This guy, and admittedly you're paying a little more of a mana premium for him, but this guy is a stop sign. This guy, the whole time that he's out, and he's a 6/6, so he's not necessarily dying the next turn. The whole time he is out, your opponent just can't cast any spells unless they can just flush their hand and win by casting him. Because, man, they are – like nothing in the game gives you a 3/5 with upside as compensation for doing anything, your opponent doing anything. That is just the strongest deterrent in this game. And casting a spell, that's like a whole class of cards.
Yeah. All right, so because I have not been graced with playing this with this card, when the 3/5 comes out, does he benefit from the spell, or because the spell was already cast, he doesn't instantly become a 5/5?
I'm trying to recall. I don't believe that he gets the benefit from it, but I mean, it's just a stronger, even stronger deterrent than it was before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Wow. All right. Let's talk about best to draft. I'm going to go ahead and steal it because I know you want to talk about it. Dr. Boom.
Yep.
The 7-cost, 7/7. Battle cry, summon 2/1/1 bots, or boom bots, excuse me. Like a boom box, which would also be a fun card. But the boom bots are 1/1s that have a death rattle, deal 1-4, I believe, damage.
That's right.
To a random enemy.
Yep.
So, I mean, even generalist gaming sites, right? Like PC Gamer, a site I used to write for, but they aren't like super into Hearthstone, right? They're not a Hearthstone site or a card gaming site. They're just into video games. Even they are having public debates on the site, posted in article format, over whether or not this card should be nerfed because it's overpowered. Gives you a big body that has to be dealt with, and two smaller bodies that have a big impact even if you do deal with them. This is just an arena where board control is so important. This is a huge swing.
Yeah, I don't know what Blizzard was thinking. I just have to be honest and say that. If we're calling out for a nerf alert in the GVG cards, to me this is front and center. And I love him. I played him. I crafted him. Let's just say I consider there to be a high likelihood that I will be getting that 3,200 dust vac at some point. So what amounts to a 9/9 with upside for 7 mana is just clearly breaking the hinges off the vanilla scale. And it's not like maybe you're going to get it. You are dropping 9-9 worth of power on the board. Having multiple bodies helps with a bunch of different strategies, as well as it's just sort of diversifying your assets, right? Like, okay, so somebody big game hunters your 7-7. Well, you still got 2-2 on the board, which isn't great, but it means that the BGH wasn't as effective as it is for every other damn legendary in the whole game.
Yeah.
But those 1-1s, the being a 1-1 isn't even what hurts about them. I mean, being able to turn them both into like little mini crackles, so they do their 1 point of damage whenever they tussle with something, and or their lightning rod for some other effect, and then they do 1-4 damage to a random target. Holy cow! I have no idea what Blizzard was thinking. This is not even. It's just objectively not in the same power level as everything else.
Boom! There you have it.
Boom! Scott,
draft it.
Yep. All right,
so what else are you drafting?
So I threw down the Foe Reaper 4000. So this thing is an 8 mana cost, 6-9, which isn't too bad. Not quite at the vanilla scale, about a mana shy, but it's close. And then also damages the minions next to whomever he attacks. What? So the 6-9 actually keeps him out of big game hunter range, which isn't the biggest thing in the world, especially in arena, but it's still a nice to have because, yeah, like we said, most of these big legendaries are susceptible to that. And it does mean that if he dies on your opponent's first turn after you play him, then his ability didn't really help and he was just a slightly overcosted 6-9. But honestly, how many times is any player in a position to kill anything with 9 toughness, you know, like on demand the following turn? Yeah. Not too often. And if they do, they're basically throwing away their whole board to do it under most circumstances. And the upside, if this guy lives, is that you get to throw 6 damage at 3 different minions and you get to kind of steer them towards whichever thing is going to fight the weakest back. Man, he will just obliterate a board state in a hurry. And in arena where people don't have finely crafted decks with only the best and most efficient cards, if you can get this guy on the board, he will more often than not just clear the board out in a hurry and just hand you board control on a silver platter.
Yeah, I cannot disagree. The one thing to remind people maybe that aren't as familiar with the card is the wording on that is he damages the minions next to whomever he attacks, but he doesn't battle them, right? So he doesn't take damage back. He's just dishing out damage. It's not like he's, okay, well, you have to fight 3 things. He'll probably die. No, he's just dealing out that damage for free.
So if you got 2 6-6s with like a shaman totem in between, you attack the shaman totem, you take 0 damage back, and you do 6 damage to all 3 things. They all die. I mean, that's a dream scenario, but I mean, that's the kind of thing you want to look for, and you want to get as close as possible to. And you can sometimes it's even worth attacking a guy on an edge. If the weakest guy is on an edge, but it means this guy doesn't really take any damage in return, and you knock out 2 creatures that time, cool, you do that. Because then on your opponent's turn, they just have to throw whatever they have into them. They have to clear them off. Otherwise, in like, 2 attack phases, he's just basically going to have cleared the board.
Yeah, he's wiped the whole board easily.
Yeah, and he just owns it. And your opponent can't play anything.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about cards that don't own it. Because this is the only legendary I have gotten in this set. That is the best to dust. I haven't dusted it yet because I don't want to dust it until I get a different legendary. Hemet Nessingwary. This is a 5-cost, 6-3 Battlecry, destroy a beast. I mean, there are much cheaper, much more universal ways to kill almost any beast that you're worried about on your opponent's board. Especially with Hunter losing popularity, like, I don't ever want this in my deck. 6-3? That guy's just asking to be killed by the tiniest little minion.
Right, and that's most of what hunters have are tiny little minions.
Yeah.
So it's probably what you're going to kill, and that's probably what's going to kill him.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, the stats balance like is just bad. I can't even see like ever wanting to play this over something like Black Knight or whatever. Like destroying a taunt minion is just better than destroying a beast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm with you, man. I don't know anybody that really holds this card in high regard. And if he would have only, like, even a 5-4, it's like, it's conceivable I would use him. But at a 6-3, I'm like, please, that's a joke. Go away.
Yeah, what are you, a lost Tall Strider? Get out of here.
What are you, a Mimiron's head?
Oh, all right.
Speaking of which, my choice was Mimiron's head. He's a 5-mana cost, 4-5, which admittedly is not that overcosted. And he has a mech, so you know there's some opportunity with synergy there. And his ability says, at the start of your turn, if you have at least 3 mechs, destroy them all and form VO7TRON or Voltron. So, this card, simply put, is, in my opinion, a trap. There's certain personality types that this will appeal to, you know, the people that want to kind of do the big novelty thing. And by the way, Voltron, I don't have his stats handy, but it's like a 4 attack something.
So it's an 8 cost, but obviously you get it for free, but it's a 4/8 with charge and Mega Wind Fury. What? New word. Which means it can attack 4 times in a single turn. So that's 16 damage. If it stays alive, it can dish out.
And that's the thing, is like, supposedly when you get all 5 parts, that you're going to deal 16 damage from the resulting thing on the next turn. But some things to know about him. First of all, this is at the start of your turn, which means you have to have at least 3 mechs, this being one of them, survive your opponent's turn. Not bloody likely. Because, your opponent knows what you're trying to do. And if he can't get you down to fewer than 3 mech units on the board, then he was losing that game anyway. Now, admittedly, you get to kill him in a particularly stylish way in that scenario, but that scenario, like, I played a deck with this guy in him, and I never, ever once made him fire. And I was just kind of, I was asking myself as I went, like, okay, well, why isn't this working? What's happening? And just getting 3 units on the board turned out to be a problem. And then I started thinking about, like, okay, well, let's say that I'm just, like, kind of like I was talking earlier, I'm just flushing my hand, I'm using Jeeves, I got guys everywhere. Well, it says if you have at least 3 mechs, destroy them all, which means if you have more than 3 mechs, if I somehow manage to get 5 or 6 mechs on the board, at that point, my opponent should just not attack any of them if they can't kill all of them, because they're all going to die. It doesn't just like pick the 3 smallest. It destroys all of them. So you have to overcommit to even have a chance of surviving your opponent's turns. And if you overcommit, then they're all going away. And if you had that many units, well, you probably would have been doing about 16 damage in the first place. So why didn't you just, instead of this guy, have a guy who was more efficient for his mana cost than an overcosted 4/5/5?
Allow me a rebuttal, Scott.
All right.
Because it's awesome.
It is awesome.
Yeah, I agree you should probably dust this card, but I wouldn't dust it until I made it happen once, even if you have to like play against some friends or something that agree to let you do it. The comments on Hearthpwn for this card mention that some players will let you do it just because they want to see it happen. They want to see the transformation. So if you get it, don't dust it till you get it just once, just because, man, it's cool.
Yeah.
But I agree. It's not worth hanging on to.
Yeah.
All right. That's our review. So let us know what you thought of this format, because we're still trying to figure out what we want to do with reviews, because obviously we can't review all these cards. We did it in almost under an hour, Scott.
That's not too bad. We got through like 24 cards in an hour.
Yeah, not too bad. We kept it moving.
We did.
We even have some time for a question. So Alex sent this in from Twitter. He says, "Hello, podcast. I was excited about and played a ton of Hearthstone around launch, but I've barely played any since. I want to change that. Do you have any tips, fun challenges, or suggestions to get back into the game after being absent for so long? I guess I could spend a day slogging through Hearthpwn or something, but that sounds pretty dull. Thanks, and keep on being awesome." So, I don't know, Scott, what do you think? What should he do to get back in?
Well, Arena's not a bad choice, because you don't need to be up on the card pool. You just need to have a decent grasp of the fundamentals, and you'll get a lot of diversity. And for that matter, if you haven't seen many of the new cards, that's a great way to sample all sorts of cards, including those that aren't normally played and constructed, both as and against those cards. But something I've been doing more of recently is, one way you can approach this is don't get attached to winning and succeeding and trying to hit Legendary. Just have fun. Like, build a novelty deck. Build a deck you might think is good. Try it out. Don't be afraid to change it or scrap it. Try a class you've never played and just see what you can do with the cards you have. Find a card that you think sounds interesting. And, like, I don't know, Jeeves. And, try to build a deck around that and see what happens. If you don't have a lot of investment in, at any given time, trying to succeed all the time, every time, I think there's a lot of room for a lot of like just diverse and fun experiences. I've been doing that with just going into ranked with novelty decks, and some of them have really been surprising me, and I lose some games, but then I win some games, and I'm, checking off my wins towards my gold classes. But more importantly, I'm finding that I'm enjoying that way of engaging with the game more than like a Legendary slog or trying to be hyper competitive all the time.
Yeah. I mean, that's something that's really hard for me. I'm trying to be better about it too, like you're saying, but when I've got like that quest, I'm one win away from finishing it. Like, it is really hard for me to not just focus on the win and focus on having fun. I would also recommend, if you actually haven't played since launch, if that's not quite an exaggeration, definitely pick up Naxxramas. I would recommend.
Yeah.
There's a lot of really cool, like you were mentioning, fun challenges or things you could try to pursue. I mean, Naxxramas just has a lot of fun little mini games essentially to play for each class, and you get a ton of cards for that value. So if you're looking to catch up and get some good legendaries, like you were mentioning Kel'Thuzad earlier, mm-hmm. That's just a great legendary card that you'll be able to throw in a lot of decks. Definitely recommend checking out Naxxramas.
Yeah, there's a lot of really solid cards in there, like Sludge Belcher, and I mean, Undertaker's not that great anymore, but there's a variety of really strong cards that'll give a lot of deck archetypes a big speed boost if you get it.
Yeah, and talk about fun, getting Fugen and Stalag to go off, tossing Kel'Thuzad too. I mean, that's a fun deck to chase.
Yes, it is.
All right, two iTunes reviewed this week. One of them is bad, one of them is good. I don't know why when I started reading bad reviews, but I don't know. I'm doing that now. So, and actually, this one I want more thoughts on too, anyways, this guy said 8 thumbs down. He gives me 3 stars. So I guess that's pretty good for a guy whose username is 8 thumbs down. He's probably a pretty negative fellow. He mentions that the most recent episode was way too quiet. I would love feedback on this sort of stuff because I'm balancing the levels. I'm sending it out. Sometimes it looks fine, and sometimes apparently it doesn't turn out fine. So if you get thoughts on that, if you notice an episode is too loud or too noisy or only coming out of the left ear or whatever, please let me know because I'm happy to replace the file, put it out again, figure out what's going on. But I would just love to hear that stuff, preferably before you give me a 3-star review on iTunes. But then thankfully I was saved by Adam, who was the co-host of last week's episode, who posted a 5-star review that said, "So good, awesome show. As a guest, I can now say that Josh is as cool off the mic as he is on it. He may not still believe that after I got busy and didn't respond to one of his emails for like a week. So he may be changing that soon to say that I'm a jerk, but there you go."
You know, Bruggy and I have actually been playing some Hearthstone.
Oh, really? Nice.
Yeah.
Did he challenge you after he beat you? How does that feel?
Did.
Is he trash talking?
Yeah, he was egging me on, and you know, I told him, I was like, I love you, Josh. I'm not sure if you were the best representative of the Survival Paladin deck. So I had to reclaim a little bit of personal esteem by having me drive it and having, you know, in its original form and with all the GVG and Naxxramas cards in its full glory.
Nice. In its full glory. That's good. No. And I am the first one to admit, I think I said on the show a couple times, I definitely made at least one fairly significant mistake during that matchup that did not help your chances at all, Scott. So, but Scott, let's be fair. I am confident that you'll come up with a deck and reclaim that seat sometime in the future.
Man, I got a number of decks I would love to bring on the show.
I know you do. You're gonna build decks that beat your own decks, then beat them again, and just try and stay on that seat forever.
I have this hobby of building decks with the express intent of making Josh rage quit now, because you alluded one time, and you were joking, of course, but to rage quitting after playing that Survival Paladin deck.
I will be 100% honest with you. That was the closest I've gotten to rage quitting in Hearthstone. It was pretty much a rage quit. That was not fun at all.
And then I brought on and played after another one of the podcasts, that Shaman deck, that Death Rattle Shaman deck that I've talked about a couple of times. And that thing I think is a pretty strong contender. And now I've got just a couple brutal efficiency decks, like my Jeeves Shaman deck. That thing is no joke. I'm just saying.
That I'm interested to play against. I'm down. We should do that.
All right.
All right. Let's talk about our card of the week. Before we do, Scott, you ready to sing?
All right. Yeah, I did get called out last week for, I guess, dodging the card of the week song bullet. So
I know. I didn't remember that, but apparently you're a dirty dodger.
There were a couple of times I might have weaseled my way out of it here or there.
Not this time. Great. Adam is on the case.
That's right. I've been shamed into performance this time. So, card of the week. Card of the week.
Yeah, that's good. You got some clapping in there, too.
Yeah, I was trying to do like a 80s sitcom take on it.
Sweet, I could dig it.
Yeah, next week's the death metal version, so watch out.
We will definitely have you back on for death metal. All right, so the card this week is also from Goblins vs. Gnomes, which can I admit real fast, Scott? I had to practice for like an hour to get goblins versus gnomes. For some reasons, I want to say gnomes versus goblins every single time. but I knew since this is the review episode, I needed to get it right. Goblins versus gnomes. All right, it's a 5-cost, 3/4 mech, and it has a battle cry. Equip a random weapon for each player. It's a legendary. A random weapon, Scott. There's a lot of options out there.
That's right. So, you know, on just the pure, like, diversity of gameplay and, you know, random can be fun tip, this is an interesting card. Generally, you have to be careful about things that do the same thing to both players where you're paying a cost premium. So this is 5 mana for a 3/4. Well, that should normally cost 3 mana. So you're paying a mana premium of 2 mana for an effect that benefits both players. So I think the key is you have to be on the lookout for situations where this can really benefit you and not an average unsuspecting opponent.
Such as?
Well, okay. So first of all, if you're playing a weapon class yourself, you probably don't want to use this.
Yeah.
Because it's going to just compete. Like, I mean, if you draw this and you have it in your hand while you already have a weapon on the table, last thing you want to do is cast this, give your opponent a weapon, and then replace what you have with something that might be better, might be worse. So that's just dumb. So you generally don't want to play this in the weapon classes. So that narrows it to non-weapon classes, where you could use it kind of sort of offensively, meaning if they have a weapon that they've paid the full benefit for, you get a full fresh weapon. It might be good, might be bad. They get part of their existing weapon replaced with a new weapon, might be good, might be bad. So it's a way to get some value out of it, but it's still not very good. Where I think this thing is actually seeing some real use is in Frost Mage, where A, they don't have their own weapon cards. B, the class is all about dealing damage to the face however you can, and weapons are not normally a weapon at their disposal. They have a very fixed amount of damage they can do through cards like Fireball, Pyroblast, Frostbolt, those sorts of things, but that, you know, that well runs dry pretty quick. This is another source of unexpected burst damage that you can do directly to your opponent's face. So that's worth something. And perhaps most importantly in the Freeze Mage is you can freeze them on lockdown through Snow Chugger, through Frostbolt and your various frost spells, and through the Frost Elemental, I think it is, where they can't attack with their weapon. And that's kind of the perfect scenario, is you give them that weapon, but they can't even use it.
Yeah. And if you want to get a super pie in the sky, toss in some Harrison Jones.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, at 10 mana, you could do it. Play this.
That's right.
And then instantly destroy their weapon and draw cards. I mean,
that
you have
is
to have
a killer
two legendary
combo
in your hands, but
yeah.
It could happen, technically.
Yeah, I mean, because there's only one of each of those two cards in your deck, the odds that you've been saving both in your hand
yeah.
and you've gotten to 10 mana without dying with those two unplayed cards in your hand is not exactly the safest bet, but it is a killer combo when it works.
Yeah, I'm stretching here because this card is, I think you have to stretch to find the right spot for this guy.
Yeah, I was surprised they made it a legendary, because to me this just feels like an epic card, and it feels like something that you'd want two of in your deck, and I think with two in your deck, it would make it a little more viable to build a strategy around it in a way that with legendaries, you know, they often get a little more packed in their punch because you can't build a deck around them because there's only one in your deck. The odds of you drawing in any given game are you know, maybe 50-50, give or take.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they're just not something you can reliably draw and reliably combo with.
Yeah. All right. So I think that's the show, Scott.
Yeah, it's a good one.
We're going to have full show notes, along with links to all the cards we talked about today, and of course the whole set and all that if you want to look at all the cards that we didn't pick, up on the blog, gamediplomat.com. Just swing by, click on Hearthstone at the top. You can see all of our fun episodes, and especially a bunch of the cool ones with Scott in the past, where he talks about strategy, which is still very applicable today, just how to pick good cards, how to look at a card and understand its value, and not what its value could be, which is a trap a lot of the times. As always, we'd love to hear what you thought of the show, what you'd like to see added in the future episodes, or, you know, if the audio isn't quite right. I am still working off this new mic, which I'm wondering is maybe what's causing audio to be low. But just let us know. Give us feedback wherever you like. Google+, we're Happy Hearthstone. On Twitter, I'm at Jay Augustine. You can email ajosh@outlook.com or just comment on the blog, gamediplomat.com. Scott, where can people find you and tell you all the things they loved about what you said today?
Well, I'm on Twitter at slants76. That's SLANTZ. 76. And if you're interested in looking up some of my decks on Hearthpwn, I'm just Slants over there. And there are quite a few decks, and I need to add my new Mech Shaman deck that where Jeeves is the corner piece. But that's I'll put that up there too.
Very cool. I am definitely going to check that out.
Please, if you guys are interested in hearing like another strategy episode, let us know. Josh and I have been kicking around a couple of ideas for what we could do next, but certainly would love to have your input.
Yeah, absolutely. Please let us know. All right. So, Scott, I think that's it. Thanks for joining us. It's always a pleasure.
Yeah, man. It was a great episode. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah. And thanks for not letting it go 3 hours like last time.
Mission accomplished.
All right. And thanks again to everyone else for visiting the Happy Hearthstone and having a little fun with us. We'll see you next time.
Bye.